brought to you by CGTN Europe.
I'm Stephen Cole. Welcome to the Agenda podcast. The video game sector is now the biggest entertainment industry in the world. There are an estimated 2.5 billion players worldwide. And it's not just the social impact, there's a lot of money to be made too. In fact, the global gaming market is worth 10 times as much as the film or music industries. At the end of last year, one of the world's most popular games, Fortnite, brought in revenues of $1.8 billion, while the world of esports generated over $1 billion globally, a figure that's expected to rise by at least 50% next year. First on this episode, we have Richard Garriott, a man who's been described as one of the founding fathers of role-playing games. So, how much has the industry changed since he began developing games in the 70s? And are games still marketed mostly towards men?
When I first got in, it was, a young boy's, young geeky boy's habit and activity. In fact, for the first almost 20 years, we fought hard about how to bring more women into gaming. But actually now, statistically, it's actually gone beyond equality. And you mentioned MMORPGs, the massively multiplayer games. We actually now have, we're at a point in time where there are more young women playing these games than there are young men playing these games. So the tables have turned.
So why is it so lucrative?
Well, it's interesting. I go back, as you mentioned, to the very beginning. And back in those early days, the revenue that the few of us who were in the industry could make off of our, simple little games. In fact, I have one of my simple little games with me. This is the first game that I self-published. But back in these days, we made, since it was one person making one game, all the money came directly to you, the one creator. And in my very first year, I was making like $150,000 for my after school work, which was, considerably more than my parents were earning. But the industry was still very small. I mean, the number of people making and the number of people playing was still very tiny. So big industries largely ignored us. The big media empires, the television and film empires largely ignored us. But as it grew, it was interesting to watch how the tides have turned. And as you mentioned, now video gaming or computer gaming, they're both from a revenue standpoint, from an employment standpoint, and frankly, from a social impact of the art standpoint, it is now, video games are now bigger than all television, all movies, all music combined, times about a factor of 10. So it's really, it is a completely dominant art form now, but that has fundamentally changed the way it gets done.
But Richard, it's so lucrative. Who's making the money?
What has changed is that, if you've ever sat through the credits at the end of a movie, you know that there's a long, long list of people to thank, who are part of it. And that's now true for games, too. It's no longer one person makes one game. Now it's a team of literally hundreds working usually for a few years, spending in the creation of a game at least for a AAA game that makes most of the money. You're spending at least $100 million. And there are some games that have spent up to $1 billion.
$1 billion over what kind of period of time?
It's usually, a minimum would be 2 or 3 years, but it could take up to 5 years to develop one. But by the way, that's similar to the movie industry these days. From the time you decide I'm going to go make a movie, to do all the pre-planning and all the execution and all the wrap-up and prepare all the marketing, it's, 3 to 5 years. And but the big companies that make these biggest AAA games can earn billions of dollars in the first days or weeks of the launch of one of the mega titles that are out these days.
So what are the biggest shifts you think you've seen in the gaming industry? It can't just be the money. It must be the technology as well.
Oh, yes, of course. Well, many of your viewers have probably heard these numbers about how fast computers are gaining power. And so, for example, there's something called Moore's Law, where
That's right.
about every year and a half, the speed of the machine doubles. And that's been true since the early days of the Apple II, yep. My Apple II that I have here behind me. Yeah. And and so if you think about the 40 years or so that games have existed, the machines are now literally millions, if not billions of times faster, and have similar increases in memory and other capabilities. And so, you know, one of the things I find most exciting about today is that for the most of that 40 years, the race was just to take advantage of that power to make it look better, to make it sound better and look better. So games were almost exclusively fighting on whose looks and sounds the best and the most like a reality engine.
Look better, but are they better? Is there a criticism style over substance?
That is exactly what I'm saying, is that I would argue that the art, the artistry, the meaning to, you know, if you read a good book or you watch a great movie, of course you want great special effects, especially if it's an action movie, but you're really there to find a story that touches your heart or touches you deeply or tells you something about the human condition. And games have been so caught up in the struggle to just take advantage of the hardware that games often, not always, but often fell short of what I would call great art. The good news is that not only have there been, I think, great art down through the years, but now the tools are so advanced that making the engine, making the display process work is no longer the challenge. And now we're really beginning to see games become much deeper artistically. So I think it's a very exciting time in games. It's difficult to break into if you're a beginner because it's now such a big business. But the truly great games of the now and the near future, I think, will become something that is more broadly respected, outside of the computer gamer culture.
Okay, if I promise not to tell anyone, what's the secret of a good game, Richard? Because Fortnite and League of Legends are very popular. What makes a video game truly excellent?
Well, so what's great about those games and a lot of the current round of multiplayer combat-related games is that the science of challenge and reward is extremely well understood now. And these games are taking advantage of it, quite scientifically, quite correctly. And so these games do a really, really good job of making it very easy to sit down and move around and play and kind of get your feet under you to, go out and have a paintball game or, something of this nature. But then they also do a great job of having very sophisticated tactics to learn, and they're metered out to you at a pace where just when you're about ready to kind of give up because it's gotten too hard, you find a breakthrough that really rewards you greatly and makes you feel like, wow, that investment of my time was worthwhile. And so that the science of the mechanics of gameplay are now really well understood. To me, the next challenge is to do that next step, which is now to wrap that in things that aren't just a sport. Although, by the way, I'm not knocking the sports aspect. It's a whole other thread we could talk about is esports and how virtual sports have become a bigger business than physical sports in most metrics.
That's almost another program, eSports.
It truly is.
Just lastly, I mean, the question you'll be asked in every interview is asked about COVID. What's it meant to you? What's it meant to gamers? Has it meant a boom because so many people are staying at home? Has it meant you've had to lay off staff? Or has it given you time to develop new games? What's been the impact on the gaming industry?
It has been, if anything, helpful. A lot of game companies, because they required such big groups of people, often already spread out across the globe. Most every big game, has teams of artists working in different cities around the world, teams of designers working already in different cities in the world. And so for our industry, going online or going virtual hasn't been much of an impediment. And on the other hand, it's been fascinating that games and movies seem to be recession-proof, meaning, whether economics are going great or going poorly, people still play their video games. And unlike the movie theaters, which still are mostly shut down around the world, playing a game at home with your friends virtually through your connection obviously is still available. So this has, if anything, been a boon to video games But I wouldn't say it's been a huge impact either way.
Richard Garriott, entrepreneur and gaming titan, many thanks for joining us on The Agenda.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thank you.
How do you measure a year? As a song sings, in daylight, in sunsets, in cups of coffee. Here on 1000 Wise, we measure a year in seasons. A program where we proudly present to you our delicate selection of how Chinese culture is incorporated into people's lives with the change of seasons. Discover the stories, delicacies, nature, ceremony, festivals, and a whole lot more while hearing how they are in sync with that particular season. And beyond that, take with you a bit of wisdom and a philosophy that resounds season in and season out. Subscribe to 1000 Wise for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcast.
Riot Games' League of Legends remains one of the e-sport industry's most successful titles, and it's a huge hit with younger audiences all around Europe. To discuss the future of e-sports and much more, I'm joined from Shanghai by Leo Lin, the head of Riot Games in China and the co-CEO of TJ Sports. Leo, what are some of the ways the gaming industry you think has changed over the last 10 years? Are e-sports, do you think, the ultimate form of video games?
I think the overall gaming industry changed a lot in the past few years, especially now. It's more like a way of people, how people live. And I think it's also a new life of style. And also, I think it's a new fashion in my point of view. And especially, esports has become a very popular format of the young people to enjoy their life and to participate into this such exciting sport format. So I think it's very hard to determine whether this is the ultimate form, but I think for sure it is still in a rapid growth and also has huge potential in the future.
Why do you think then League of Legends is so successful?
I think the core is, I would say the most important factor as I see, is we do care a lot about what our players will think and how they may like this event or may like these sports. So when we consider all the factors, when we prepare the plan, when we do all the operation, and we do all the creative, we really want to put ourselves into the shoes of our players and think about what they may like. And I think that is a secret, I would say, magic of how League of Legends can be so successful in the past 10 years, because everything can change. But just one thing that will remain as our core, that is the taking care of all our players' experience and also focusing on all the detail to delight them.
What is the most crucial factor then in making a successful esports market? Is it funds? Is it talent? Is it policy design? What is it?
We can always have different types of events. We can always have different super pro players. But the one thing that remains no change is the fans. So all we want to do in the past 10 years is to create an experience that can make sure our fans can enjoy this event and this sports.
What about COVID, Leo? Has that helped the gaming industry, do you think? Or has it sort of stopped you from your key market of the events?
On one side, definitely COVID had bring us some kind of trouble, especially for some offline events. For example, this year, in many occasions, we are doing online event first and then try to provide the best viewing experience. On the other side, I also believe this is an opportunity there for esports to step up and to show how charming it can be and to show how popular it can be. So it is a challenge, but also it is a great opportunity for esports.
What is China's role then, would you say, in the international e-sports arena?
The magic point of League of Legends as an e-sport is an international event. And it is the international sports. So all the regions can compete with each other and try to win the title. So although China is, in terms of the performance, is leading the world in the past 2 years, I still believe that the magic point here is to have a fierce competition, a fair competition, as well as all the pro players from different regions to compete in one arena. And that's why this year we have Worlds 2020 in Shanghai, and we're bringing all the pro players from different regions to this city and try to compete together.
You've seen amazing growth. You described this growth over the last 10 years. What do you think the gaming industry, especially the esports industry, is going to look like in the next 10 years?
I'm actually very optimistic about that, because in the past few years, I'm personally experiencing the amazing growth. And also, I found out that the driver behind these amazing growth in the past few years still remains as powerful as we can see, and even more powerful in the coming few years. For example, the penetration of this game, and for example, the passion from all the parties, all the investors, all the parties into this game, and all the pro players and pro teams. So I do believe as we move forward, we will see a more and more stronger momentum upon esports.
Leo Lin, head of Riot Games China, many thanks for joining us here on The Agenda. So we've heard what the industry titans think about the future of gaming. But what about the consumers, especially with the next salvo of the console wars due in November, when both Sony and Microsoft release their latest efforts? Joining me now from Austin, Texas, is Tina Amini, the editor-in-chief of the gaming and entertainment website IGN. Welcome, Tina. We spoke earlier to a couple of game developers, but we're hoping to get more of the consumer side from you. Are we currently living, would you say, in a golden age of gaming?
In a sense, absolutely. We've achieved such great lengths within the hardware, the software, the games themselves. Unfortunately, it's come in the middle of a pandemic, so certainly there have been constraints on those hardware manufacturers and including on those developers. But that said, everybody's trucking through, and by the time that we're actually able to get our hands on the PS5 and the Xbox Series X, I think you're going to see a really big burgeoning of impressive games, very immersive games, unlike what we've seen before.
Well, as you say, the next salvo in the console wars is coming up in November, the Xbox Series X and PlayStation 5, respectively. Do you think, a clear favorite amongst the two?
So we actually consistently poll our audience on IGN, and it is a consistent PS5 consensus. They've actually gained a lot of favor within this current generation. I think they pulled ahead of the Xbox systems simply because they were able to offer more consistency and a little bit more clarity in terms of what their lineup was and what their hardware was going to be. So it gave Sony that advantage, and everyone basically transitioned onto that platform. Of course, you're going to follow where your friends go so that you can play multiplayer games simultaneously with them.
The Xbox Series X costs just under $500. The PS5 almost exactly the same. And that's a big change from last time round, isn't it? When the PlayStation 4 was rather cheaper than the Xbox One. So will that make a difference?
Absolutely. Price is one of the most important things. And it's interesting because this generation and the announcements leading up to it have been particularly strange. Microsoft and Sony have been playing a bit of a game of chicken. So we actually only just recently got the announcement for the release dates for both hardware and then also the pricing model. So it was good to see that they're both competitive against one another, and they both have budget systems. Xbox has the Xbox Series S, PlayStation 5 has a discless PlayStation 5. Both of those are at cheaper price points as well.
Bit of a difference this time around, though, isn't it, with the offer of a subscription services too, with huge libraries for a management monthly fee, which I suppose is a bit like a sort of a gamer's Netflix, isn't it?
Xbox actually introduced Game Pass a while ago. So this is something that you can participate in within the current generation. And that really is a big part of what their motto is moving into this new generation as well. They're very much about creating that ecosystem for gaming and not constraining anything within one particular piece of hardware. Sony, on the other hand, has been a little bit more precious about the PlayStation 5 experience and driving towards a new PlayStation 5 community, essentially.
Well, another giant of cloud-based gaming is Google Stadia. Has that taken off in the way you would have expected?
Not quite, especially not sentimentally with our audience. I think there's a lot of issues with that model. That's a little bit less like the Netflix for games model, whereas Game Pass very much is. Game Pass is offering you new games, especially coming from first party, meaning Xbox-owned studios, whereas Google Stadia has a subscription model, but you actually have to pay for games individually as well. So there's obviously licensing issues there, just like Netflix would have, where they need to get the rights to be able to stream games, stream movies and TV shows for you. So for something like Google Stadia, it's very contingent on your internet connection and the stability there as well. And gamers don't really like that. They like the specificity of a resolution benchmark. They like the specificity of achieving a specific frame rate within their experience. They don't want to make the sacrifice for the ease. And there are many other reasons as well why Google Stadia has not been as appealing as its initial pitch. So there's a lot going on with Google Stadia that's better in theory than perhaps in practice, and gamers really haven't taken to it.
It wasn't that long ago that all the talk was about virtual reality. Has that taken off or has it gone away, do you think?
VR has always had incredible applications, including outside of gaming, but the price points and some of that functionality has been a little bit inaccessible. And now you're actually seeing really recognizable studios like Valve that semi-recently launched a game called Half-Life Alyx, which is a 100% VR-specific title. And we saw Oculus Rift sell out upon the announcement of Half-Life Alyx. And it's since its release, it's come out to really high criticism. We gave it a 10 out of 10 on IGN ourselves.
Well, earlier, I spoke to game developer Richard Garriott. Now, Richard told me the graphics are getting better, but the games themselves might not be.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there are elements of style that get incorporated into gameplay. For instance, there's something as simple as a technique called ray tracing, which means more realistic lighting and rendering. You can render shadows and reflections more accurately. So certainly that's more of a style over necessarily substance that's actually adding to the experience outside of making it more immersive. But then you have the option of better simulations in, let's say, smoke particles or wind, and those can actually be used as part of gameplay. Let's say smoke particles you can use as cover in a first-person shooter. I think we've seen the power of graphics really be able to sell a game simply on its own. Microsoft Flight Simulator that came out recently is a very good example, another 10 out of 10 game from ourselves. But it's been a huge boon in the industry because people are very impressed with strictly just how realistic it looks.
You've played more games than most people, I suspect. So what is it? What is it, Tina, do you think that makes a game truly exceptional? And what's your favorite?
It's very much a personal preference thing. I think for some gamers, they like to be challenged. They want a supremely difficult game that really demands that precision of play. It's sort of an experiment in how good am I, essentially. Not exactly my type of game. I prefer more fluidity than that. For others, it's story and acting prowess, especially as the industry has actually brought on actors that you're familiar with from TV shows and movies. Now that we have motion capture, that's something that's able to render someone's face and facial expressions very clearly and accurately. For others, it's replayability. It's about that one more round experience of a game like Fortnite or Rocket League or League of Legends, the kind of experience where you can just get even more, become more, even more of an expert within that one game that you've decided to put a lot of energy into. And then I think for developers, it's about innovating. What's new? What's advanced? What's changed the industry on a fundamental level? I think there are examples of games that have really pushed boundaries and made developers be a little bit more thoughtful in their creativity in approaching games in the future. For me personally, it is the story and the acting. I think an example like Red Dead Redemption, where it's a giant open world game and there's so much to do and characters to explore and navigate their character arcs. That really is a really impactful, thoughtful experience that sticks with me after playing.
All right, Tina, you've told us what's exceptional. Finally, what's your favorite game?
You know, I always say my favorite game of all time is Final Fantasy X, but that's given a very personal experience that connected me with the game. I had a surgery at the time, and I was able to, while being bedridden, able to explore this amazing world with the characters and have these magical abilities. It really takes you out of your real life experience and gives you something substantial.
And that brings us to the end of another edition of the Agenda podcast. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher and Spotify. You can also find us if you search CGTN Europe on Facebook, Twitter
Instagram, and YouTube.
The most interesting questions.
Are there other living beings beyond Earth?
Will man or machine be in charge?
Great question.
Always have more than one answer.
Well, hold on, let me just draw up a list.
And always come from more than one person.
That's where the credibility lies.
The concept of having a machinery which is alive and evolving didn't wait for us.
The end of inequality of incomes and wealth around the world, can you imagine how difficult that is at the moment to achieve?
Every episode, Stephen Cole, Murray Beveridge, and some of the brightest minds out there shed light on the answers to some of the most intriguing questions.
There are two ways of looking at this.
Machines can't really discriminate between civilian and military targets.
The Answers Project.
Maybe we need to just look at this in a bit more detail.
Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
The Answers Project, a new podcast from CGTN Europe.